Hello and welcome to another episode of Bald Move Television. We're the officially unofficial podcast for all of television. I'm your host, Aaron.
I'm Jim.
And I'm Cecily.
And today we got a cornucopia of topics. We're going to be discussing HBO's new comedy series headed by Danny McBride, The Righteous Gemstones.
Created, written, all directed.
Wearing all the hats. He's actually wearing no hats. He's wearing some sick lamb chop sideburns.
Sure is, yeah.
We also have an interview with technology journalist Jared Newman, where we're going to keep the business talk going, the industry talk going, with a focus on cord cutting. Then Jim and I and Cecily will be revisiting The Boys. We've seen the first four episodes of Amazon's new super anti-hero series, and that will be it. That's it. Stop talking. Let's talk about Righteous Gemstones up front.
Okay.
What did you guys think about this new comedy series? It's so if you don't know, this is it's starring John Goodman as the patriarch of the Gemstone family, which is a what would you call them? A mega church or a televangelist? Yeah, televangelist. Danny McBride is his eldest son, Jesse. Adam Devine of Workaholics fame is his youngest son, Kelvin Gemstone, and they live in this big giant mansion on mansion compound. They all have private jets. It's all about excess in the name of the Lord. Well, that's where your tithing goes. What'd you guys think of the series?
I'm not a huge fan of Danny McBride, but I enjoyed it.
I'm a medium-sized fan of Danny McBride, and I enjoyed it.
I'm a big fan of Danny McBride, and I didn't really like this show.
You're the pop... What, Papa Bear?
Really? Papa Bear? Wow.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe we... Do we start there, or we start with the good stuff?
I can...
Let's mix match.
Yeah.
I'm super curious to know why you didn't like it, if you're a big fan of Danny McBride, because it felt very Danny McBride to me.
Irreligious upbringing, maybe?
No, I just don't think that this show really knows what it's trying to say. And it wasn't even that funny until it got into like the dark humor. And I think that if they had embraced that a little bit more, like the wave scene and the scene at the end, I thought were like made me laugh out loud. But everything in between, it felt like they forced so much happening into this episode. I'm not even sure who I'm rooting for, what the goal is. I don't know.
Like to say who the hell am I rooting for? None of these people are good.
Yeah.
With the exception of maybe the small town preachers, the small town pastors.
They make an argument for it anyway.
Yeah, they try to. I have my personal views on those sorts of things, but like it felt very sort of Big Lebowski to me, and that like once they got to the plot stuff and past like just the introductions of, hey, here's a big mega church family running this thing. I started to pick up more of what it was putting down.
Yeah, but it's like, are we gonna talk spoilers about this show?
Yeah, it's. I think so. I mean, it's
not,
the first
maybe
episode.
Not yet. Let's like continue like our general impressions, but then once we say spoilers, because there's a couple things I definitely want to talk about.
Okay, I guess it's like there's a conflict for Jesse, Danny McBride's character. And I don't want to see him win that. I'm like, yeah, fuck it. Take them all down.
Yeah.
I just want to see those people get hurt. And I don't think that's exactly what they want to happen in the show.
Because like, I feel like some of these shows, it's kind of like this is just a televangelist version of Always Sunny, where you kind of like, maybe you're not rooting for them to get hurt, but you'll certainly point and laugh when they do.
I'm rooting for it.
What I thought was interesting is I thought that this was going to be just a family of shit bags, and they kind of are, but like it seems, and this is for one episode, that like John Goodman's Eli, the patriarch, is kind of like, yeah, I wouldn't say he's a man of God, but I think he genuinely believes in the things that he's doing. The family values part of it. Like he loved his wife. He loves his kids.
That part of it, yeah.
He wants them to be good Christian boys.
But he raised those two shits, so he was a bad father.
But sure. I mean, but like, you know, fucking read the Bible. That's the whole history of the God's people is good fathers raising shit sons who gave birth to good fathers who raised shit. Like, it's that's life.
Well, I but don't like that book either.
And I also thought that, like, Adam Devine, who I hate Adam Devine, he's my kryptonite, but I thought he is born to play, like, this is a great outlet for his role. That he's definitely dumb and doesn't know what the hell's going on and is, like, weirdly emotionally and developmentally stunted, but he seems like he's a, in this weird world, an okay guy. Like, he doesn't seem like he's a massive hypocrite. Okay. And the way that Danny McBride's character, Jesse, who's doing cocaine off of stripper boobs with all of the other deacons in this church, the weirdo deacons they got in this church, seems like he's just a two-faced hypocrite. Yeah, and I guess he's the protagonist villain of the series, it seems like, just based on 1 hour. By the way, the whole time I'm watching this, I'm like, this is the most jam-packed half hour of comedy I've ever seen.
Half hour?
It was a half hour?
Then when I got to the end, it's like, I was like, oh my God, it's an hour long. No, right. Because I'm like, this just feels like it's so much plot. Holy hell, so much plot.
So one of the things that I really appreciated about this is there is clearly a lot of personal history in this. Yes. I looked up Danny McBride because I saw one thing, and this is a spoiler, but I got to make this point. In this episode, this first episode, it shows Danny McBride's son, like, falling asleep with a Bible on his chest. And Danny McBride is like, oh, look how sweet, you know? And then he turns the Bible over and he's highlighted all the bad words throughout the entire Bible, which made me think, okay, Danny McBride fucking knows something about religion. Like, he has been around the block, because that is exactly what I did as a kid. And to the point where you'd go into the glossary and you'd find all the P words where they abbreviate them, and you'd be like, oh, ha, 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 the devil peed their eyes together. Like, and you'd highlight those. Like, that's exactly what we did as kids. So and I looked it up. Danny McBride raised as a Baptist. His mother apparently did perform church sermons using puppets. You can kind of see the influences there in the show. Mm-hmm. And, like, it clearly seems like he has a personal history with this stuff. So it probably makes it better for it.
Yeah, like, if he's the son of a preacher, that makes because I even think that Danny McBride plays Danny McBride in everything I've ever seen him in.
That's kind of why I don't like him.
And there's a little bit of that with Will Ferrell, too, that, like, they're very – because Ricky Bobby is a very different character from Ron Burgundy, but he's also not – you know, it's just like they've taken different like Will Ferrell is this rainbow spectrum, and like Ricky Bobby is the, you know, the indigo spectrum, and then the Ron Burgundy is more of the red orange. I think Danny McBride is actually doing something specific. It's recognizably Danny McBride, but there's just a little bit, I don't know, with the accent work, and I just love his power stance, like when he's flexing, like he's holding this like hard flex when he's talking to his wife in front of all these women, and that's like only time he kind of does it, except for when he's like dealing with like the people trying to, well, I don't want to do
or when he's like up on stage, you can see him doing it, just like purposely holding himself.
But it's the way he holds his like wrist and stuff. It's like there's things that I haven't seen him do in some of the other series, and it's just slightly, I think it's because it's specific. You know, like this is something that he kind of can probably slip into the mental space of.
Oh, I'm sure he intuitively understands it.
Right.
The other thing I really liked seeing in this was sort of the switch that they flip when they're performing in their church and when they're not. Uh-huh. And like that just, I don't know, turning on not just the charm, but the sort of belief system, the entire belief system gets switched on in that moment. And like, you can just see visibly the change. The actors are so good.
Yeah. And I like the physical comedy they're doing, because there's this like scene where John Goodman is disciplining his son, slapping them. And the timing and the way that he administers those slaps is just really fucking funny, because you think they're going for like they're I'll just, fuck it, this is a minor spoiler, if it can convince one person to watch it, it's worth it. he goes like he slaps Danny McBride, like just open hand, hard slap. And then he goes to the baby and who's played by Adam Devine. And he kind of like cringes and mules and he raises it. And you can kind of like, he's like, oh, I just can't slap my boy. I can't slap my boy. But then he just quickly slaps him with the other hand. Uh-huh. And it's really, really funny. And a lot of times I forget how really funny John Goodman just is.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
And he kind of feels like the straight man of the series. But when he's able to do stuff like that, it's really funny. I love the family dynamics, like how the poor sister is just like that same scene. She's like, slap me, daddy, I'm a gemstone. Like she's just right. Like wanting any scrap of affection from this patriarchal clan. Her mom's dead. She probably had a lot of relationship with her mom, and they mm-hmm. hint at that she, like, her mom saw that she was like special and smart, and you know, if they turned the gemstones into her hands, they'd probably be 10 times more successful. But she can't get nothing. And I just love that kind of like bickering, how these people are adults, but like when they start fighting, you can just see them age regress to children. Little kids.
Yeah.
And that dynamic is really funny. Mm-hmm. And the fact that some of this is happening in front of the larger church community, mm-hmm. Is just also adds a lot of tension to it, just because like the social embarrassment. It's pretty good. Pretty good.
I thought the music was really good. It's kind of got this modern but sort of semi-religious feel to it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Especially in some of like the, I don't know, like dubstep drum stuff that they do. Like it somehow is tinted with a religious sound. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's like a choral sound, or maybe mm-hmm. it's like bells or something. I don't know. But I just very much got the vibe, hey, this is very modern but also... Yeah. Religious.
Right. It definitely places you in that world.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it looks like there's twin tensions here of like, there's a blackmailing plot involving one of the gemstones that's driving some of the action. But the main plot is the gemstones' effort to take over the flocks of these lay preachers that they're going into this, I couldn't even tell you where this takes place. Someplace in the South.
Yeah.
Could be the Midwest.
I don't know.
But they have Dermot McRooney, Delbert.
Mulroney.
Yeah, that guy. He plays like the head of the lay preachers. And I thought he was really good, because I thought the joke was going to be they're just small time versions of the shitbag that the shitbags the gemstones are. But when we see his home life, he does like he's a fucking carpenter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, he's got this like really he's living in this kind of fairly simple house, and he's building, like, you can imagine him building rocking chairs for his elderly parishioners. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I can't wait to see how they further develop. In the scenes to come, it looks like Walton Goggins.
Oh shit!
Is going yeah. to? Did you see any of that? That he's going to?
No, but I saw them in Vice Principals, which yes. I thought was pretty good.
It looks like that he might be like the bad boy lay preacher that they bring in to run the gemstones off, or yeah, it looks pretty. It looks pretty funny, wow. And I thought the cast was all good. I thought they had really good chemistry. Of course, you know, Dan McBride and John Goodman have worked together before. Yeah, it's just a great fit of the theme and the characters they got playing. And it's funny, you say you're not a fan of Danny McBride, but he did write and direct and star in this thing, and I thought it was mm-hmm. really, really good. It also looked expensive sure. as fuck.
Yeah.
Like, just the mm-hmm. on location of, like, you know, you got to sell that these guys are preachers. And, you know, growing up in the 80s, that was like kind of like, I felt like the heyday. Like, maybe they're going through another one with like this fucking Olstein prosperity. I don't mm. troll antenna channels that are all religious anymore. But, you know, you had these tales of like preachers that had the private jets and the fleet of Cadillacs and the air conditioned dog mansion, like mm-hmm. their dog houses mm-hmm. And did sell that kind of just crazy in your face opulence. You got to spend some money. You got to rent. You got to pay a lot of money to rent those things. And just, I just love the Father, Son, the Holy Spirit jets. I love the matching all white Land Rover kind of like motorcade, the extensive staff that Eli has, and they all line up like it's fucking Downton Abbey to greet him when he returns home. I found it very satisfying. Mm-hmm. Do we want to talk a little spoilers before we?
Mm-hmm.
This will probably only take a minute, so if you don't want to just bump forward, look at the show notes. Two big belly laughs for me.
Okay.
Well, let's see. I think it's probably the same. I think you actually alluded to them.
The hardest I laughed was a pretty just sort of one and done, like throwaway sort of joke.
What was that?
It's when they're going to recruit the sister, and she's got the guy that she's hiding in her fiance or whatever that she's hiding, and she says he's a sculpture. She says, "Yeah, I bought that sculpture and I got a good price on it because it's a weird dick." And I just cracked up.
That was funny. I love the slap. The slap was really funny.
Yeah.
Cecily, what was one of yours?
The wave pool.
God, when that thing starts off, and then
the lights and the rave
music. It turns into a pool rave.
Yeah,
it was
so fucking funny. And it's a 24-hour marathon. Like, just meta, I'm wondering, like, what did that look like? And then the one that I just laughed for like a good 30 seconds is Danny McBride backing over blackmailing Satan.
Uh-huh.
And I actually really like the Satan character, like the mask work and
flipping you off, giving you the tongue. Like,
yeah,
it's all good.
And then it's like, I will not be blackmailed. Well, that's what's happening. Blah, 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 blah. It's really funny. But then, I don't know what it was about. The sister ran the one guy over as a panic, and then he's like, over under. And he's like, are you going to get medical, or are you backing up to see if they're all right? And he's like, nope. And just this wide angle of him reversing through this mall parking lot and eventually running over this guy. Oh, man. It was so funny. It was so funny. I think that was the we covered all the big belly laughs.
Yeah. It's that it's that part of the dark comedy where I guess that's the thing is like if I want to watch a show like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, just embrace that kind of darkness and I can laugh and not feel bad about it. Maybe they'll do that in the future episodes.
Anybody have a guess as to who the blackmailer is?
So I had a guess, but like I'm thinking of all these reasons why it probably couldn't be, but they keep referring to Danny McBride's eldest son, Gideon, and you know, that he ran off and he's left a family. But like the Satan guy looks too old, like if I'm just judging by the eye holes and all that. But I guess he could be the man behind the man, you know, like that, like the devil and his crew is the F Society and Gideon is the Remy Malek character, the Mr. Robot. So that's the one, because like that's everyone's talking about him. It's a sure way to get slapped into Jim Stone's house if you bring up his name. And there's some bad blood there. So to me, but as they mentioned, like there's so many people that would want to bring him up on this.
Right.
Right. You got to ask yourself, like, who took the video? Were you in front of like a webcam or something? Yeah. Or was someone sitting in front of you? You got to wonder who that was.
Mm-hmm.
Ask it.
Looks like a coffee table.
Yeah.
So implies a couch that someone's sitting on filming.
Right. Exactly. Figure out who all was at that party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it had to have been like all people you trust and knew already because there's so many high profile people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it was any of the Gemstone personnel because they all looked like honestly gutted that this might be happening. Oh my God. Oh, the comedy behind the projected penis in the wall and all the interaction Danny McBride's head had with that penis.
It was always on his face or he's opening his mouth talking towards
or his bushy like white man afro framing it as like this giant pubic bush. It's so fun. And they
at the beginning of that scene when he walks in front of it the first time, I was like, I need to pay attention to this because I know what they're going to do here. And then I lost track of it through the rest of the scene.
Oh, no. They did some real good space work. And they don't draw – it's not like the it's essentially the Ace Ventura joke, but they play it so soft that you can lose track of that penis and where it's at. But, yeah, if you pay attention to it.
As a rule, I never lose track of a penis.
Yeah,
but
there's a penis on screen.
This time.
Can't break contact with that one-eyed monster. It's just – I'm really looking forward to the next episode this week.
Yeah.
Now we are going to have an interview, a little tech talk, a little business talk, a little industry talk with Jared Newman. Joining us now in studio is Jared Newman. Jared is a technology journalist who's written about cord cutting for the past 5 years. He's written for such outlets such as Tech Hive, PC World, and Fast Company. Welcome to the studio, Jared.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, so we started talking a couple weeks ago because we've done a lot of kind of like, I don't know, insider TV streaming talk, and we'd had a conversation, and you'd mentioned that you'd listened to some of our discussion, I think, about the HBO, what, Max?
Yeah.
And Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. And you'd mentioned that, like, you disagreed with some of our analysis because it kind of missed some of the nitty-gritty kind of concerns or thoughts that, like, a cord cutter would have. So I thought maybe we could, since you're an expert and you've written about the subject for 5 years, maybe we could talk about that, because I've realized that we're kind of like the opposite. Like, since we do this television and movie coverage for Bald Move, we essentially have a subscription to all the things, but that's not how, like, a cord cutter would look at the landscape. Could you kind of help us out here?
Yeah, I guess I would say not necessarily. I mean, from my perspective, so I cut cable TV 10 years ago. That was about when I started out as a freelance journalist, and just didn't really have a lot of money coming in. And it was sort of a, obvious way to cut costs. And I think at that time, Netflix had just started streaming. So this was like 2008. Netflix had just started doing streaming video. Hulu had just started doing streaming video. And so it was sort of a cobbling together what you could kind of experience. And it was at that time, you couldn't watch, if you wanted to watch HBO without cable, you just couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. It didn't exist. So from my perspective, it's been pretty great to see a lot of new options to, slice and dice the cable TV package, or get certain elements like HBO by itself. And it's at the same time, it's been kind of jarring to see what I call sort of the gee whiz, it all sort of adds up argument. Mm. Cause I get it. But you don't have to. And from my perspective, I haven't been doing that. I haven't been subscribing to everything, and I'm kind of made peace with not watching everything. And so I think there's sort of this disconnect between the attitude of maybe you guys are just I got to watch everything on TV and now it's getting really expensive, versus I'm just going to, watch whatever I'm getting with my subscriptions and it's probably going to be enough.
So what how do you see the gee whiz, it all adds up theory? What, how do you see that?
Well, so a lot of times it's kind of lazy in the sense that, and I'm not calling you guys lazy, by the way.
Oh, we are. We will copy that.
You have no idea.
All right. So fair enough. But, a lot of times it's kind of they do this rough math that isn't really based on anything. So it's, and I've seen articles like this, they come out every 2 to 3 months, where it's Netflix exists and there's Amazon Prime and you subscribe to Hulu and then Sling TV and HBO, and you add all these things up and now it's almost as much as a pay TV service or whatever. Mm-hmm. But first of all, we have to start with the fact that average cost of cable TV is $100 a month. And that's just for TV. It's not for internet. That's uh-huh. The average of what people pay. There's a bunch of studies that have that average. FCC data kind of backs up that. So you're already starting from this. If you're going to compare and you want to add up Netflix, which is $13 a month, and Hulu, which is $6 a month, and HBO and Showtime, you still have a lot of room to add up a lot of these different services and still be less than $100 a month. The other thing is that, a lot of people are already subscribing to Netflix or Hulu or maybe on top of a cable TV service.
Yeah.
So, some of these costs are already built in. You often see people say you have to add the cost of internet, but a lot of people are already subscribing to internet. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you see I'm getting this great bundle deal for my cable TV provider. And first of all, if you are able to get a great deal from Spectrum or Comcast or whoever, and you're only paying, $20 or $30 a month more for TV than you would for internet, that's great. I'm not going to judge you and say you need to cut cable as a statement or a stance or whatever. You should do whatever is best for you financially. But again, that's not the reality. The average paid TV bill is $100 per month. So, it actually turns out when you're not on some amazing promo deal, the discount of bundling TV and internet is $10 to $20 a month. So it's not a huge savings that you get from combining these things.
It seems like they'll always try to take it away after a year. You'll have to go through the hassle of calling them and saying you're going to switch comp and,
Yeah, I mean, there's that whole like other side of it, which is just like a peace of mind argument, right? So I mean, there are you know, plenty of services now like YouTube TV and Hulu with live TV and PlayStation View that will effectively replace a cable bundle, and like they may not be that much cheap. I mean, they tend to be around $50 a month now, so that is still cheaper than the average cost of a pay TV package. But also, like, you don't have to pay for, like, extra equipment as a rental. Like, you just buy a Roku for $30 or $40.
And bad equipment. Like, that's my number one complaint with, like, DVRs is they just suck across the board. I would much rather have a Roku remote in my hand than deal with a DVR.
I will say, like, people say nice things about the Xfinity X1.
Haven't tried that one.
Like, so I'm trying to be fair here. Like, you know, people say the voice control is good. And that's fine. I mean, not everybody has Comcast, and it's not always that good. You still have to like pay for all those boxes, which kind of stinks. Like, who wants to pay $15 a month for hardware
for every room you want to put it in? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like that's a lot of the extra cost. I mean, if you look at YouTube TV being $50 a month, like a lot of that extra cost is just the average that people pay is like renting extra boxes and paying all these weird fees and you know, the built-in costs of like they have to account for like these customer service costs and like, you know, tech support coming out, those kind of things, which you don't have with live streaming.
Can we like maybe back up a little bit and define what cord cutting is? Because I know a lot of people who, you know, have Netflix and HBO don't either wouldn't consider themselves cord cutters really, or don't even know what the term means. And I have a weird relationship with it because back when I got rid of my cable package and went with Netflix, similar to what you did, I consider myself a cord cutter because I wasn't subscribing to a cable service anymore. I mean, I still had a cord, right? It's now just an internet cord instead of a cable cord. I guess what does, in the modern context, cord cutting mean?
I guess my personal definition is like not subscribing to traditional cable or satellite TV service and hopefully saving money. And like I kind of just leave it at that.
Gotcha.
So that would include a person with the internet and like PlayStation View.
Yeah.
That's a cord cutter.
And I know people disagree with that because I've seen it for years. Like, it's just the cable cord, but a different delivery mechanism if you subscribe to one of these services. And like the problem with that argument, like I get it, but okay. So PlayStation View is $50 a month or $55 a month if you want regional sports. And we already established that's cheaper than the average cost of cable, but people still say, you know, it's not really cord cutting. But what about something like Sling TV, which is $25 a month? It's still a bundle of TV channels. It's essentially like the same kind of service as PlayStation View, but it has fewer channels and it's cheaper. Or like, what about something like Philo, which is $20 a month and is just like non-sports channels? Also still a bundle of TV channels, but considerably cheaper than the $100 a month.
Or even
TV user. So like, is that cord cutting? Can you really say that's not cord cutting? It seems like you're really just arguing semantics, and I'm more concerned with, like, are people getting what they want and saving money?
Yeah, to me, it sort of had an element of choice. Like, with cable television, it was really the only game in town for TV for the longest time, and you either paid it or you didn't watch basically anything.
Yeah.
And then Netflix comes along, and HBO starts doing their thing, and Hulu, and now you have some choice, right? And now I'm sort of viewing cord cutting as, like, getting rid of the forced bundle and now picking and choosing a la carte what I want to subscribe to. It's weird though, because now we're sort of wrapping back around to where, you know, even you don't even have to have a service like PlayStation View or whatever. You could be subscribed to Netflix, HBO, Hulu, coming soon, Disney Plus and Apple TV. And if you watch them all on like a Roku or something, how is that fundamentally different than having it all come through a DVR as a big bundle?
Well, I think it's good to going to what you were saying before, which is that like you have some measure of control. So like,
right.
If you decide, I mean, look, it's not like a perfect, everybody wants that like utopian a la carte scenario where like you can pick exactly what you want and it costs a fraction of cable. But like there's a lot of reasons it doesn't really work that way. Like all companies want to, some extent, bundle things that they have together. Like a service like Netflix is kind of bundling content. But like you can decide that you don't want Netflix anymore and get Hulu, and you still get like a significant amount of things to watch and you get to save money. So it's, like you don't get to watch that one show on Netflix you wanted to watch, but you could pick up Netflix later and watch it for a month and then get rid of it. So I just think like it's ultimately good to have that level of control. So it's like, it's kind of frustrating to see the argument that like, oh, we're just back where we started. Because like, it really just, I feel like people kind of forget like how much worse it was.
Sure, sure.
And it, so it seems like that's maybe one of the things we miss in our analysis, the idea that people wouldn't be loyal to a streaming service. It'd be like, I have been a Netflix member and I've watched Stranger Things and all the cool that, and I haven't, I but I've heard a lot of good things about Handmaid's Tale. So it's not picking up Hulu in addition to Netflix. It's like, I'm going to cancel my Netflix subscription and then roll with Hulu for a couple months until I see Handmaids and Harlots and Shrill. And then once I'm done with that, I might pick up HBO Max because I've been meaning to catch up on Game of Thrones, or I want to see Watchmen. And they're just kind of like digital nomads where they go to where the oases are.
Yeah, like, and I think people are going to do it different ways. Like, I think Netflix is probably going to have the easiest time just like keeping people year round because they have so much stuff. And if they don't, they don't. Like, if like that bundle of Disney and Hulu proves to be a better value for people, then like, then they'll just stick with that service for year round. You may see like those other services may get more people churning in and out. You know, especially if they're like not priced competitively. Like HBO Max is supposedly going to be like $17 a month. Like, people are going to have a harder time justifying having that all year round if they just want to watch like Westworld when it comes back.
Yeah, CBS All Access was that for me.
Yeah,
where I just wanted to see Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah,
and then after I watched it, I canceled.
Yeah, and I think like, you know, them buying, or sorry, merging with Viacom is probably like their attempt to maybe build something that's a little more sustainable year round, which, you know, I think it's, I think that's kind of good ultimately to have like more services that are, you know, a good value and have a lot of things to watch.
Sure.
So one of the things I feel like, you know, we talked about this last week, but Disney Plus, talking about this bundle with Hulu where you get Disney and Hulu and ESPN for the low, low price of essentially $13 a month. And a lot of people were kind of oohing and on, but I looked at that and saw, okay, you've got Disney Plus, which is whatever. It's an unknown quantity, but it's going to have a lot of stuff because Disney owns a lot of stuff. You got Hulu, but supported with ads. And then you've got ESPN Plus, which is essentially a shell that has some soccer and MMA pay-per-view. And that doesn't seem like, but the marketing's all about, oh, look what all you get. And I'm like, well, look at, you get one full-fledged feature. You get a service that's crippled with ads, and you get a service that's essentially a platform to spend $50 a month to watch dudes fight. And to be fair, ladies fight as well. What is that how kind of the cord cutters are they? It seems like from talking to you that cord cutters tend to be a very well-educated, choice-conscious part of the market. So is that kind of the analysis they had of it, or?
Well, I guess I would say that I wouldn't want to lump all cord cutters into like one mentality or approach, or because I talk to a lot of people and there's like a huge range of people doing it in different ways. There's definitely people that like have no idea what they're doing and accidentally subscribe to a whole bunch of services that they then forget about and end up paying for. So like, there's definitely different sides to it. But yeah, like hopefully people will make that, the, you know, the calculations of the news. I mean, personally for me, like I'm not super interested in Disney Plus. Like, I think it's a great value. I think a lot of people are going to like it, but like, I'm not really a huge Marvel Star Wars. Like, I like it, but probably not enough to like binge on it as opposed to watching some other stuff. And so to me, it's kind of good that that's like a separate service. Like, people are fretting about like Netflix losing all that content and going over to Disney. But to me, like, I would rather have Netflix take that money and invest in like other IP. Cause I'm not really interested in the Disney stuff. I wasn't going to watch it anyway. So better for it to be in another service for somebody else to pay for. And I can put my money into Netflix where it might go to something I would actually watch.
Yeah. And they can make seemingly more stuff, from that same amount of money, right? Because they don't have to pay for the value of Star Wars. They don't have to pay for the value of Marvel. Yeah. They can develop new IP that will be cheaper, but maybe just as good.
Yeah. And it was the same thing with like Friends in the Office. People are like, oh my God, like Friends in the Office are leaving Netflix. I never watch Friends in the Office on
Neither
Netflix.
Neither did I.
Like, I have no interest in watching those shows. So like, for Netflix to not spend $100 million a year on Friends anymore, like, great. Go make something else that I'll actually watch.
Yeah. Or 10 other shows that I might watch, right?
Yeah.
So I guess the other thing I wanted to talk to you about is, you know, Jim and I always kind of fret about the nightmare scenario, which I feel has been predicted for like the last 10 or 15 years, that these companies, you talk about how you got the choice now. Like, you can carry Netflix for a couple months, and you can switch to Hulu, and you can switch to Disney Plus. You can kind of make these choices. Like, what keeps these media companies from continuing to conglomerate and then to make deals between them to where you can't make those choices anymore? Like, if you have to get the Disney Plus bundle, that's going to be $30. It's going to include all of ESPN, or they start, like, you know, the other thing is, like, what's to keep them from starting to do contracts? And at first it's going to be an option. It's going to be like, hey, save 20% of your subscription by signing a 12 month contract with them. Like, are you optimistic in a 10-year time frame from now, like in 2030, we're still going to have this much freedom and choice? Or do you think that the companies will start to build fences and hedgerows and walls around that and divide and conquer the market that way?
Well, I just, first of all, generally, like, I've been writing about this for a long time, and like, people have been predicting that cord cutting will eventually be futile for at least 5 years now. So like, it's just kind of this thing where, like, we're always expecting cord cutting to not be worth it. And when is it actually not going to be, when is that actually going to be the case? So that's part of it. I do think, like, media consolidation is not so great. And I think where it really hurts is, if you look at these live TV streaming services. This happened last year, like when Discovery acquired Scripps Networks, and suddenly, like, Discovery, which had not been part of any of these services, was being, like, bundled together with the Scripps Networks that people wanted to watch, like HGTV and Food Network. And so, like, you ended up getting these, like, mandatory larger bundles at higher prices. And I think we might see the same thing play out with, like, CBS and Viacom. So, like, Viacom channels, like, Comedy Central and MTV had kind of been cast out of a lot of these live TV services. But a lot of those services also have CBS. So there's sort of a risk that, like, these are going to get bundled back together. And it's going to be, like, more homogenous bundles at higher prices. The flip side of that is, like, CBS and Viacom coming together are going to be able to create, like, more interesting standalone services. Like CBS, like you said, like CBS All Access could get more interesting once it has the Viacom back catalog. And, like, Pluto TV, which is a free service that Viacom acquired earlier this year, they've already said, like, they're going to start adding CBS content to that. So, like, on some level, like, I do think it's good to have, like, these media companies, like, making themselves better able to compete with Netflix and Amazon and Hulu. Because I don't really want Netflix to have, like, a monopoly over, like, culture and, like, TV creation. Like, I think it's good to have, like, 4, 5, 6, like, viable competitors. And as far as, like, you know, I don't know, like, the whole contract thing, like, again, we haven't really seen that. Like, when is it going to happen? Like, people aren't going to go for it if the value isn't there. So,
well, I think before, the companies always had, like, the infrastructure advantage. It's like, you know, cable was the only, or Comcast was the only game in town because they owned all the copper infrastructure. Like, cell phone carriers dominated certain places because they owned the towers. With the internet, I mean, I guess it's not impossible for, like, these large, you know, AT&T, Time Warner to, like, start buying large set, but they'd have to. It's like the fact that no one kind of owns the infrastructure that cleanly, is that one of the ways that it's resisting that? Because people just do have a choice, and, you know, you can't really fundamentally take it away from them, other than, I guess you can with geo tracking, and then you get into proxies, and
I don't know. I mean, you know, there's definitely, this is sort of a separate argument, but I know, like, the other, like, cord-cutting doomsday scenario I always hear about is, like, well, you still have to pay the cable company for internet, so they're just going to, like, jack up the price of internet to make up for not having selling TV service anymore. Mm-hmm. But that, like, again, we've also been hearing that for 5 years, and, like, it's kind of overblown. Like, there are definitely, it's bad not to have, like, good competition among internet providers. But generally speaking, like, TV service for them is not super profitable, especially like when they offer these like promo deals to new subscribers. And so you hear now like they're letting people walk away and go to these live TV streaming services because, you know, they're happy to just kind of like turn the screws on people that have sort of apathy about it and are just going to keep cable TV. And they're making a much greater profit from internet service anyway. Like internet is just way more profitable for them. They don't have to like do these drastic price hikes to compensate for the low profit people that are cutting TV service. So like really it's a little overblown in terms of the idea that like the screws are just going to get turned on people by the internet providers.
Well, all right. Thanks for stopping by. You write a newsletter called Cord Cutter Weekly that helps a lot of people trying to navigate these waters. You want to talk about that for a bit?
Yeah, sure. So I write a weekly column for Tech Hive called Cord Cutter Confidential. And I started doing a newsletter a few years ago that, you know, has a sort of a summary of that column and a bunch of other stuff like news and deals and sort of quick hits on what's happening. And so that's up to 18,000 subscribers now. And comes out every Friday, so it's free to sign up.
We'll have a link to where you can find Jared in our show notes, as well as where to sign up for that newsletter, Cord Cutter Weekly. Thanks for stopping by, Jared Newman.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Okay, before we wrap things up this week, we have seen half of The Boys. We've seen the first four episodes out of its 8-episode run. We all really liked the first episode. We've seen three more. Where are we at with The Boys now?
I'm still really liking it. As a matter of fact, I was watching three to catch up to you guys last night, two nights ago, some. And I got to the end, and I'm like, damn, I want to keep watching.
Why the fuck is Carl Urban not a bigger star?
Yes.
Like, every time I see him in, like, Judge Dredd or this or Lord of the Rings, he's... Yeah. I don't know how much range he's got, but there's no shortage of these kind of, like, angry, short-fused, tough-talking dudes, and he's so good at it.
You say that, but then you go back and look through his IMDb history, and he's been around for a long time, and he's done a ton of stuff.
He does a lot of direct-to-video type stuff, though. Like, a lot of genre
work. But he's never
work.
Really, like, the star of anything.
Yeah.
We need another Judge Dredd with him.
We definitely need another Judge Dredd. He's probably got another 5 to 10 years that he can make one. Well, I don't know. The helmet, like, he just, as long as his the nose, from nose to chin, he looks relatively ass kicking. He can do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I, there's this show. This show is so great because, like, at first I thought it was going to be essentially just an updated Watchmen, and I guess it is, but instead of, like, big geopolitical questions, but even then I guess it does, because, like, one of the big cornerstone conflicts in the series is, like, what relationship should the superheroes have with, like, the military and the foreign policy? And, you know, these superheroes, like... It seems like what they're wanting to do is they got some money with their movie deals and their comic books and their action figures, but you know where the real money is? Military industrial complex.
Oh, yeah.
They want some of that big that head of state money, and it looks like they're going to get it. But they also do some small stuff like I thought A-Train's like you know, maybe he's like an aging athlete. And he needs a little help, maybe being the world's fastest man. So they're taking these performance enhancers, and that might have been the reason that he caused that horrific accident in the beginning of the series. That
he's on the V.
Yeah, that what they call the everyman that's on the boy squad? You got Frenchie, You got Carl Urban, and then you got the kid. Did they call him
Hurley Huey?
Huey, that's what it is. Baby Huey. They call him Baby Huey or Little Huey. It's because he pinches. No. Like, I'm 6 foot tall at some point.
Yeah.
I think the show's great, and what really makes it for me is the performance of Homelander. What's that?
Yeah, he's great.
Anthony Starr,
Mr. Banshee.
Yeah, he's
so good.
Deranged. The way he's, I mean, I don't know how they found a way to effectively hide from him in a moment, but like, there's no safe conversation you have inside of that building. His strange mommy fetish.
That's
just like the way his eyes start to water and just gets that look. It's so good.
That scene where he's staring at a portrait of himself, which is already creepy enough, but then they go to his point of view, and what he's really doing is staring at Elizabeth Shue nursing her child. Mm-hmm. Like, what the fuck? Because I thought it was a romantic fixation, but now it seems like...
I think it might be a little bit of both. His like, mom, if he had the chance to fuck her or, like, nurse from her himself, I think 100% he does it. And she's playing it up, too, just to keep him
in control. It's a way to
control.
Keep him... Because that's what control do you have over this individual?
Right.
Like, Queen Maeve, who seems like a Wonder Woman... I mean, seems like. She is a copyright-safe Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
I don't know... Like, she seems like the only one of the seven that could rival him in terms of power. But even then, did you get the idea during when that plane was going down that if she didn't leave, that she was dying?
She's not invulnerable in the way that he is or that Translucent was.
Was.
Yeah. and also, I think she can't fly.
No, she can't fly.
I don't think Wonder Woman can in most canon either.
She can.
Oh, can she? I thought she's just like original Superman. She can jump so high, maybe it looks like she's flying.
No, she has an invisible jet.
She's got the invisible jet. Yeah, she can fly. Why she got the invisible jet?
I don't know. Ask the people who made her. I've watched a lot of Wonder Woman.
Okay. I have not, so I'll take your word for it.
But, I mean, you're right. The physics might be. But this isn't the Wonder Woman podcast. Let's move on.
How many compromises will Starlight make to stay part of the seven? That's my biggest question.
I think with Huey grounding her a lot less, I'm worried about the kind of sacrifices we're going to see that Queen Maeve made that they hinted towards.
Yeah.
Like maybe they were her and Homelander were put into this relationship for the optics, and it got abusive. And it looks like he's going to try to force her back into that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's
by like
trying
to kiss her in front of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I thought Brightburn. I haven't seen Brightburn yet. It's coming for the Spooktacular. But I thought that was such a great idea for a movie, and I don't think I've ever seen. I've seen like Red Krypton, which is like essentially what if Superman landed in the Soviet Union and was their hero, but he wasn't really a villain. He certainly, I don't think, was psychotic. But like the idea of Brightburn, like what if this alien child landed and instead of being, you know, Clark Kent, he was just like Jeffrey fucking Dahmer and he's got all these powers. And you can't stop him. Like, I thought that was terrifying, but this is just a full grown Brightburn situation.
Do you think that Starlight can make the changes that are necessary?
No,
they don't put Homelander against her.
No, they don't
specifically yet.
I do think that she might be very powerful, and we don't know it yet. Like,
because
she's young,
yeah.
She doesn't have like maybe she hasn't fully come under her powers, and also just anytime she cuts loose with those, they make him seem just incredibly powerful.
Yeah,
like if she hit him with one of those things full blast, maybe it would muss his hair a bit.
I'm expecting at some point that we will see Homelander's eyes burned out by her.
Mm-hmm.
Because they keep talking about that, right? Like, I'll burn your eyes out if you touch me again or talk to me again or whatever. I think that being one of his powers, the laser vision, I think he'll have his eyes burned out.
Yeah, and he also, it's like, walking away from the first episode, I'm thinking like, well, Homelander's crazy and the Deep is a creep. God. But like, honestly, like I could believe the Deep being kind of like a Starlight coming in and just like you deal with Homelander and he's so terrifying and so
like
amoral that like you kind of lose your perspective on what it's like to be a superhero.
He's just so obtuse, and you think that he is kind of menacing to Starlight when she first gets there, but then it's like he's just childlike. Like maybe he's just mimicking things he's seen Homelander do.
Yeah, because he was completely unaware of any tension between them when they were doing the patrol.
Right.
Like that was like...
I think they played this character wrong in this show.
Interesting.
It's a character that I actively don't like, and it's not because... you know, he's an asshole and a creep. It's because now they're trying to play him for laughs. Yeah. And they went so fucking hard in the beginning on him being an asshole.
Yeah.
I can't laugh at anything that happens. That dolphin scene should have been fucking hilarious. It didn't get a single laugh from me because I'm just thinking, I'm not going to laugh at this guy. I'm not going to laugh at this guy's antics when he's a fucking monster.
Yeah, you might be right. I enjoyed just because I remember, like, that was on the Old Man Murray website. They had this guy called Sean Baby that did, among other things, deep dives into the old Super Friends cartoon and, like, you know, went back and watched him and asked all the questions an adult would have of these cartoons.
Right.
And his articles on Aquaman and how, like, I said, all of the Justice League is pathetic in light of Superman.
Sure.
But, like, sure. Aquaman especially. Because, like, you know, the Jason Momoa version of Aquaman's got a lot more going on than just being able to talk to fish. But that's literally the Super Friends version of Aquaman, all he had going on. And so I kind of like the constant digging of, like, what a joke he is and how pathetic he is. And, like, watching Homelander roll tough on him was... But you're right. They, because I feel like they want you. They're trying to make him a joke, and they're also trying to make him a little bit sympathetic.
Yes,
and
it's just not really working for me.
Yeah, it's just really hard when he just like Starlight's such a good person and has such a good heart and has such a great way, like all the right reasons to go, and to see her, you know, fucking treated the way she was by him. It sets a tone for a character.
Yeah. One that is not just going to be forgotten.
I did laugh pretty hard at the dolphin rescue, though.
Okay.
When that dolphin comes flying out of the hammock through the windshield.
In slow motion.
In slow
sort of
motion.
Sort of locking eyes with him, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Plus the, like, the implication that that's his lover.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Also, there's a couple. The death of Translucent. I had guessed what was going to happen about halfway through. Like
yep,
the obvious answer is, like, well, if he's got impervious skin,
get in.
He can't have an impervious butthole because otherwise
he's dead.
Yeah, he's dead. So yeah, that's one of them. But I thought the translucent fight was really funny. Like, just seeing an invisible man explode. And just like the reaction that you had with Huey, is pretty funny. And gross and kind of, I mean, that's what The Boys is. It's funny, but it's also just so fucked up. Mm-hmm. One of the ones that was more fucked up than funny was like the airliner rescue.
Yeah.
Where like, and it's funny because I'm like, you expect like Homelander just because, not because he gives a shit about any of these people, but like you've seen Superman do it so many times. Well, he'll just fly the airplane and he points out, it's like, I can't do that. If I do that, it'll just crumple the airframe and it'll do this and that. And he's like, the whole time he's just like, yep, everything's going to be fine, everybody. And as to be on the plane that you got rescued by Superman, and then you slowly come to the realization that Superman's going to let you die.
Mm-hmm.
It was fucking dark, man. And Maeve's whole reaction, wanting to save at least one, he's like, well, if we do that, then there goes the seven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and part of me also thinks that he did that on purpose. Like, he didn't have to use the laser eyes through the entire cockpit panel. I think he could have responded.
Oh, my God. You're right. Because then he instantly spun it to, like, why we need Homeland. Oh, my God. Yeah. I didn't make that connection.
These were his talking points, right?
Right.
Because he's kind of dumb. So I could kind of see him doing that just in, like, not knowing your own strength. Like, oh, this guy's in. And then you've destroyed the plane's thing. But yeah.
Yeah, he wielded that with the kind of control that someone who just figured out they have laser vision did.
Right.
When he was able to pinpoint the gas tank on the other plane that he took down.
Oh, I thought he just blew up the engine and cut it in half. I didn't know. I didn't take it that he was like precise about all that.
No, when they found when the Deep found the plane on the ocean floor, Elizabeth Shue's character said that there were two like eye width size holes in the gas tank, and that's what made it explode. So he's got precision.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know where it's going. I know who I'm rooting for. The other really cool piece of dramatic tension they got going is the relationship between Huey and Starlight, because like he legitimately likes her and she legitimately likes him. But he's being used as his double agent, which is obviously going to fuck things up.
Mm-hmm. And he's on a mission to kill the Seven. She's part of that now.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, Carl Urban, I don't think is going to be wanting to hear anything out of Huey about her being the good one. Because the other thing I think you're going to find out, just guessing, is that even Homelander probably started off being okay, but it's just like, absolute power corrupting. And like, if you've got that kind of godlike power, it's got to, you eventually just see humans. Like when Translucent says, I've got diamond skin and I'm completely invulnerable and you're just a bag of flesh flavored water. It's like they're just a higher form of life than us. And eventually they're going to start believing that. Mm-hmm. And, what do we do with the lower forms of life on this planet? Whatever the fuck we want.
We eat them.
Yeah. Among other things. So yeah, it's a great series. I can't wait to finish it. One other thing before we left. So I've been watching this on Amazon and I've read a lot of articles about how this is like the biggest series that Amazon's ever had.
Oh, wow.
And I'm watching this stuff and they always show some promo at the beginning. Mm. And I'm seeing promos for Hannah, which I think debuted like 2 months ago. And you know what I'm not seeing?
Expanse?
The Expanse. Like
Amazon.
Is Amazon? I feel like Amazon's kind of fucking up their marketing here, because why try to get me interested? I guess the theory maybe is like, get something people excited for something they can binge right now. But isn't The Expanse already available on Amazon? Like the whole series so far?
Yeah, seasons 1 through 3, definitely.
So like, if you're going to advertise a season 4 of something and you've got 3 whole seasons of an amazing television that's bingeable, why the Hannah? You got your biggest show, your biggest success ever. Chain that shit together, Bezos.
Yeah, start, do like an official Amazon rewatch. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, maybe 2 no-name podcasters from the Midwest to do a podcast about your show leading up to it and cover all of your back catalog.
We are available for such work.
We
let
are.
Let me tell you. I would be happy to do an official Expanse podcast rewatch, whatever. Just breaking my heart every time I watch one of these and it's not a commercial for The Expanse. Like, you guys did really, like, what came out of Comic-Con was really cool, really exciting. I love those trailers. Get that shit on your goddamn platform.
Yeah, it sucks, too, because Expanse is such a serialized show that it's like, do you really want people going into season 4 fresh?
No, you don't.
You want them going in with that experience, right? Yeah. So you got to get in early on the marketing here so people have time to catch up.
The thing is I've heard that they're also going to drop it all in one day, which is going to be lovely for us. And we talked about how like that's really great for bingeability, but it's going to ensure that The Expanse is relevant for like 1 week, then Christmas will happen and you'll never hear about it until the next season,
right?
Maybe their deal is like, it's all going to be a binge anyway, so we start advertising it when season 4 comes out, and then people got 4 seasons and they can just binge it over the long, dark Christmas break of our souls.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Try and get traffic for the entire catalog, not just the latest season.
Yeah. I'm just gripped up. I just want The Expanse to succeed and succeed hard, and I get panicky whenever they're using any opportunity to promote it and they're not. Okay, that's it for Bald Move TV this week. If you'd like to reach us, you can do so at tv@baldmove.com. You can follow us on all the social medias at Bald Move. Everything goes down at baldmove.com. We'll be back next week for another episode of Bald Move TV. Also, not for nothing, Cecily and I'll be putting Harlots to bed, or at least season 3 to bed next week on Bald Move TV as well. Until then, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
See you later.